Red Hat, the death of CentOS, the Phoenix that's risen, which is Alma Linux, and a lot more. Today, I am very fortunate to have Benny from Alma Linux, who will be talking a lot about Red Hat, a little bit about open source licensing. I promise you, you're going to learn a lot about what goes on behind the scenes and all of its impacts on you. This is the first time I'm interviewing someone that's involved with an entire operating system, and so this is going to be extremely exciting, and I hope you all enjoy it as much as I did. Now, let's cut to Benny.
My name's Benny Vasquez. I am currently the chair at the Alma Linux OS Foundation. We are the foundation is the owner of the Alma Linux project. And I've spent a bunch of years in tech and open source, but I, in general, have ended up on the community side of things, or like the public relations side of things, more than the development side of things.
Yeah, so do you have kind of a history with Linux and just the general Linux community before Alma Linux, which we'll talk about?
Kind of, a little bit. So I got my start in technology when I was in high school. My dad was the technology director for a high school. And so every summer we would go rebuild the labs. And most of them were Windows machines, but we did a bunch of the work in Linux. And then the like imaging and that kind of stuff was faster if we did it with Linux. And then as I got out of high school and out of college, I did a bunch of random things. But then my first grown-up job was at a web hosting company. And web hosting is built on Linux. Like most of the web hosting that's done in the world is Linux-based. So I started learning Linux and started getting good at it. And that was in 2004, I think. So I've been, oh, wow, that's 20 years. Yep, been doing Linux-based stuff for 20 years.
There you go. No, that's a good celebration then.
Yeah.
It's a long time. But I'm sure it gives you a lot of experience, and you, I'm sure, are very knowledgeable, and it's what brought you over to the Alma Linux side of things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
When you all reached out to me, I'd never heard of Alma Linux, and we actually had to hop on a call, and I asked pretty probably silly questions, but I'm going to do that again because I'm sure there's other people listening who haven't heard of Alma Linux and don't have the context, and I still am kind of rough on the details. So can you give me a little breakdown of what Alma Linux is and why it came to be?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are only 3.5 years old, so you are forgiven for not knowing who we are. The project got started because Red Hat announced, well, the first thing that Red Hat did was announce that they have this new thing called CentOS Stream. And in the enterprise Linux ecosystem, before CentOS Stream existed, Fedora was the upstream that everybody pulled from. And then Red Hat would build from Fedora. And then CentOS Linux, which we had all used for forever, was built using Red Hat's code, but it was shipped for free. It was rebranded and shipped for free by a bunch of community members. And then that would have been 2019, Red Hat announced this new thing that they called CentOS Stream, and it sits between Fedora and Red Hat in the build tree. So it is downstream from Fedora. It's more stable than Fedora, and it is essentially what will be in the next major version of Red Hat. So it's some people call it development branch. It's not really a development branch. It's a solid operating system all in and of itself, but it is much more frequently updated than most enterprises want to see. One of the things that it did was get the Red Hat customers to engage much more quickly. And if they would use CentOS Stream as their testing, or as kind of looking for problems that might pop up in the next version of Red Hat, it was much more effective and much better for their community to have CentOS Stream there than previously. And then because they saw so much success with CentOS Stream, they decided to shift all of the resources that they had been pouring into CentOS Linux, which was the downstream version, to CentOS Stream, effectively discontinuing CentOS Linux. That was a problem because it had been around, like I said, for 20 years, and it was hugely adopted across the planet on in all industries, all corners of the planet. We have all seen CentOS in some way. Whether or not you're using it, you know it existed. And that meant that discontinuing it caused ripples in every industry, and even people who just, run their video servers or their home automation on an operating system, if they were using CentOS, they were impacted by this. We, the Elm Linux project got started by a bunch of folks that were directly impacted by the end of CentOS Linux, and said, it's okay that Red Hat doesn't want to build it anymore, but we still need it, so we're going to start building it. And that's how Elm Linux was born.
Got it. So for people who are kind of unfamiliar with how Linux stuff works, sometimes with the enterprise stuff, a lot of this on my end as well, because I'm more familiar with the desktop, like the user desktop side of
Sure,
things.
yeah.
So Fedora is something I'm very familiar with. So is what you're saying that kind of the newest updates and the coolest things happening, they push the desktop users, and then maybe next year or 2 years later, it'll go downstream a little bit. Those features will end up in now CentOS Stream. And then from there, even further down the road, it'll end up in Red Hat.
Kind of, yeah. The use case for Fedora ends up being desktops. It's not necessarily targeted at desktops, but the reason that people end up choosing it as their desktop operating system is because it's updated more frequently. So you can get newer software and newer drivers and like newer anything you might need, which means that it is the preferred operating system for desktops. It's not always one way or the other. It is much more frequent that if you're running something on a server, for example, or a high performance computing cluster or something like that, you want something that's stable and doesn't change as often. And that's why, but you can still get bug reports or bug fixes and vulnerability fixes and that kind of stuff. Like security flaws are still patched in it. So that's how the release cycle ends up slowing down by the time you get to Red Hat or Alma Linux is you want the frequent updates up here because I want my video games to work and I want my video card to go faster and I want like that's why Fedora ends up more so much more widely adopted in desktop areas and not as widely adopted for things that want fewer updates with more stability. Does that make
Got it.
sense?
Yeah. And so let me just make sure I get the order correctly here with where Alma Linux would land. So it would be Fedora on the top, and then it would be CentOS Stream. And then what previously was CentOS?
So CentOS Stream gets repackaged and built into Red Hat. We are also pulling from CentOS Stream and matching build releases and versions with Red Hat. So it gets a little bit confusing because we're both pulling from CentOS Stream as our upstream, but we're not building CentOS Stream. We're building a Red Hat equivalent operating system.
Got it. So you're trying to replicate Red Hat here. Where did CentOS used to be in
It used
this?
to be downstream from Red Hat.
Okay. So actually, you're not really replacing what CentOS exactly used to be. You're offering an alternative more to Red
Well,
Hat.
so CentOS was a copy of Red Hat. The reason that we're building alongside Red Hat instead of what I would say downstream from Red Hat is because last year Red Hat announced that they were moving their source code from the public where they had always shipped it to behind a user agreement, essentially like a user interface that said, if you have an account here, you agree not to use this code to build an operating system. And that is a problem for us because we are going to use the code to build an operating system. So we shifted where we were getting our code from just copying Red Hat to duplicating what Red Hat was doing, but using a source code that they were okay with.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk a little bit more about Red Hat and why the license change. And then I have more questions around that. But before we touch on that, why would a user and why would someone who used to use CentOS not just migrate to Red Hat or CentOS Stream? And why would they probably prefer to use Alma Linux for certain situations?
So it depends on the user and what they were using CentOS for. If they were using CentOS for their Let's say they're using it for their home automation, then the reasons they might pick Alma Linux over CentOS Stream over Red Hat. CentOS Stream is much more frequently updated than Red Hat is. So you're going to end up in anytime you want to run updates, like has everything settled so that all of your software still works and everything's still compatible and that kind of stuff. So you might end up in a little bit of a problem there. If you don't want to deal with having to update as frequently, you're going to choose Alma Linux. One of the other reasons that you might choose Alma Linux is we have intentionally added back older hardware support. So if you've got something that it has that has been deprecated by Red Hat and CentOS, then you might come to us because you still need support, but you still want to get updates for your operating system. You might come to us instead of Red Hat because you don't want to deal with the licensing system that Red Hat has. They do offer free developer licenses for Red Hat if you want to. They call them developer licenses, but you can basically use them for any reason. If you decide you want to do that, you still have to deal with the licensing side of things. So if you're just a like a normal at-home user, you're not going to pick Red Hat because you don't want to deal with the licensing stuff unless you're already familiar with it. Those are the biggest reasons that you'll choose Alma Linux over Red Hat or CentOS Stream.
Got it. And so, quick question, because beforehand you said everybody's touched or dealt with CentOS at some point or another. What if somebody listening hasn't? They've never heard of CentOS. They've never heard of Red Hat before. Why should they care?
I'm going to tell a little bit of a story. So last year, I went to an event called DockerCon, and it was kind of outside of what we normally go to in terms of events, what we normally staff. But it was, let's go see what we encounter. And the thing that I found there, I go to very Linux-centric or open source-centric events. So when I walk in the room, people at least have the context of what Linux is or what an operating system is or something like that. And at DockerCon, it was incredible to me the number of people that had no idea what Red Hat was or CentOS or like had no like really didn't understand what an operating system was. And it turns out that that was because when they're doing DevOps work, they're so abstracted from the operating system, they don't really care. If they're able to do the work that they need to do, they're not paying attention to it. So there's definitely a group of people that have no idea about operating systems, especially if they're just entering the DevOps or Linux world. They're not necessarily going to know what CentOS Linux was or really care about it, right? The reasons that I think most people end up caring about their operating system have to do with compatibility, so hardware compatibility and software compatibility, and with the ecosystem around the operating system. So if you are trying to do something and you encounter an error and you Google that error and you hit a website that gives you a solution for it, you're going to be happy about that and you're going to have a positive interaction with that operating system. And it might not register to you what you're doing at that moment, but long term you'll continue to interact with that community. And so you'll end up seeing which communities you like more or don't like or anything like that.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting observation. I mean, I feel like especially when it comes with work, people, a lot of people, myself included, want to use what's necessary to get their work done. And so I can't really fault people for not, I think, looking a little deeper into what's running behind the scenes until something happens, which I think might be a good time to talk about Red Hat. As somebody, I follow Slashdot in my RSS feed. But I'm not keeping up with, super
With everything.
detailed Linux news. But I know the Red Hat stuff was a big thing that kept popping up in my RSS feed, but I didn't really get the nitty-gritty details of it. So do you mind covering what Red Hat did, why they did it, kind of how it impacted the community, and just I guess your general thoughts on that whole saga?
Yeah, so CentOS and Red Hat coexisted for a very long time. CentOS was just a project that was put together by a bunch of people that cared about it, but there was no central governance or ownership of the project. And as a not sexy, not contentious project, there wasn't much in terms of like new contributors to what they were doing. And over 20 years, there were, by the time the drama started, there were just a handful of people who were contributing to CentOS. And that caused a lot of problems for a lot of people because those people are, aging out of wanting to continuing to maintain an operating system or have lost interest in general and see it as a burden instead of something that they're excited about. When re recognizing that all of that was happening, and that CentOS was as impactful as it was, the CentOS maintainers and Red Hat reached an agreement where Red Hat hired, I think, all of the remaining maintainers as employees and kind of took ownership of the project. So suddenly, a project that had long been kind of like coexisting with Red Hat was owned by Red Hat. And there were a lot of people that got very uncomfortable. Like, what are you going to do to my project that kind of keeps you in check, right? And then that's when the change in how Red Hat is releasing CentOS started. It was, I want to say, I think it was 5 years after, 4 or 5 years after they hired all of the maintainers, is when they introduced CentOS Stream. And then they made the changes with discontinuing CentOS Linux. And then they last year announced the source code changes that changed where the source code was kept. And I think, if I'm being honest, these are all moves that are kind of in line with what we're seeing across the open source industry right now. There's a commercial entity that provides an open source project or product, and that project or product is used in an open source way. So somebody else takes the code and finds another way to monetize it that ends up competing with Red Hat, the people who are providing the project. And that ultimately is not something that a commercial entity is going to put up with for a long term, right? There's a lot of discussion around what the right reaction to that is. If you're a commercial entity and you have a project that is widely adopted, but also has a free version that somebody else is building, or has a paid version that somebody else is offering based on your code. But I think at the base level, that's the reaction, or this is a reaction to that happening to Red Hat. When it comes to open source as a philosophy, it is really hard to hold yourself to the idealistic position that open source tries to take, which is the software is out there, anyone can use it, anyone can do anything they want with it. Is like that's generally how they try to how, there's nuances with the licenses, of course, all of that. We're not going to get too deep into that, right? But there's a really it is a personal challenge to say. I mean, if we go to the extreme, I say I have this project that I care about. I put it out into the world. I'm very happy with it. I'm very proud of it. And now someone who strongly differs in political beliefs or religious beliefs or whatever is now using that software to counter me or to push their own agendas. How am I going to react? And that's when I think the personal and moral quandaries about open source pop up, because at some point somebody is going to use your software that you disagree with, like fundamentally disagree with. And if you are not in open source for those fundamental and foundational reasons, then you're going to be confronted with it sooner than you think, for sure.
That's a really good way to put it. I have a lot of respect for open source developers because there really is no way to be an open source developer without just believing in the software itself. At least long term. I mean, maybe short term, but.
For sure.
Quick question, because on the topic of licensing, you mentioned that CentOS went away, and Red Hat updated the licensing for the Red Hat Linux distribution,
Sure.
correct? So you can't make an operating system directly from that, so you get it from Stream.
So these are the kind of like hairs that you have to split when you're doing commercialized open source. They did not change the licensing. They did not relicense or change the open source licenses that are used on their software. What they did was make themselves extremely compliant with the GPL. The GPL says that you have to provide the source code to your customers. And so they provide the source code to their customers and only to their customers. They put it behind like a user login, and when you create an account for that user login, you agree not to use the code to build an operating system. So when you get you could create an account and download the code and use it however you want, right? But the like moral quandary for you is you've made an agreement and you're going against it, but also there are legal ramifications there. You've agreed to something and you're going to violate it on a business level. You're gonna have problems, right?
Yeah, and then I guess two questions that stem from that. One, what's Alma Linux's license?
So we're
I'll
all
start there.
like across the board, we are using the same licenses that we get from our upstream. It's primarily GPL. There's a bunch of different ones in there. We have a whole wiki page about it because it is very complicated, because there's a bunch of stuff in Linux that has different licenses, and some of the licenses compete and some of them like supersede each other and that kind of stuff. So you have to be very clear. But essentially what we do is the same thing that everybody else does.
Okay, so I could fork Alma Linux
Oh yeah.
and
Yeah,
distribute
and
it.
people
Okay.
do and have, yeah.
Okay, cool. And
Yeah.
then my final question regarding the licensing. What's stopping Red Hat from doing what they did with Red Hat with CentOS Stream?
Nothing.
So what would
They
you do as Alma Linux if that situation arose?
I think it would be an interesting conversation to be had, right? The reality is that they would not benefit from putting CentOS behind anything. We're not the ones that they're seeing as a competitor, because I'm not making any money off of CentOS or off of Alma Linux, right? If you were going to pay Red Hat, you're never coming to me. That's not where you want to be. But there would have to be some kind of motivation that would make them move it. If they did, then we would go to our sponsors or our community and say, okay, we need more engineering power. We need to set this up in a way that is sustainable long term. I think that kind of thing is always in the back of your mind if you're reliant on another project. But we're also the people who are active in the Alma Linux project are active upstream. It's not a closed system for us. So we all work together. I don't think that's going to happen.
Got it. Okay. Just a hypothetical.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah. So if I'm somebody who's using CentOS, and now I kind of have a few questions that are more practical for people who might still be using CentOS or a similar operating system, what's it like? Because your website advertises a single command that's all it takes to, I guess, migrate from CentOS to Alma Linux. So do you mind talking about what it's like to move?
Yeah, no problem at all. So if you are on a CentOS 8 or any of the other Enterprise Linux versions that are 8 or above, it is a single command. It's an RPM that you install called Alma Linux Deploy, and it just essentially swaps out all of the repos that you're using and updates you that way.
Will people tell a difference? Does it look the same? Like, do you guys?
So there's a little bit of branding difference, but from like the command perspective, like when you're interacting with your desktop or you're running commands or anything like that, it's going to be exactly the same. Your the whole goal is to be the least amount of disruption as possible, right?
Very cool.
The other option for you, if you are on CentOS 7 or below, or if you're on Scientific Linux 7, we have a project called Elevate that allows you to upgrade your operating or upgrade your device in place. So one of the pain points that we have all had as CentOS users is that we can't upgrade in place. We had to migrate the data, like build a new system, migrate the data, and then deprecate the old system. And there was always this big problem with migrations like that because anytime you're moving data around, there's always something you missed, something you forgot, something that needs to be reconfigured, something that the DNS is wrong. Like every time there's something that you have to fix, right? And we know a number of people, especially in the web hosting industry or in like smaller shops that can't afford to duplicate all of the hardware they have, they really end up stuck. And those sorts of devices make us sad. We want them to be upgraded. We want them to be in a modern supported operating system. So Elevate allows you to move in place between major versions. So you can go from CentOS 6 all the way to Alma Linux 9, just with it's not, I will say it's not easy, right? In-place upgrades are always challenging. But when we initially released it with CentOS 7 to Alma Linux 8 support. And when we released CentOS 6 support, there was somebody that commented on Reddit and said, "Oh my goodness, I needed this. Thank you so much. I'm gonna go use this on the I have four devices that are running CentOS 6 right now. I'm gonna go upgrade them right now." And then he did, and he upgraded three of them to Alma Linux 9, and one of them he could only get to 8. But even then, like that's going to get security updates for another 6 years. It's that kind of stuff that for me makes all the difference.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. And I know that longevity of operating systems is becoming a big talking point, especially with Microsoft cutting support so early for things like Windows 10. I have a desktop right next to me that I got used on Craigslist for $200 because I wanted to play some games on a Windows laptop. And my main laptop I'm calling you on is ARM-based, which leads to a lot of compatibility issues with software I use. And so
Of
having
course, yeah.
something that's a little more universal is really nice. It's got a 6700K Skylake processor. It's old, but it's still nice.
Sure,
It's
yeah.
still
Just
more than
fully
powerful for
functional.
anything. Yeah, it's got a GTX 1060 in it,
Okay.
and I can't get Windows 11 on it. It doesn't have support from Microsoft, so it's stuck on Windows 10, and I think they're going to start charging for security updates starting next year or the end of this year. I don't know the exact
I heard
timeline,
something
but
about that. Yeah.
it's insane. And so I can't imagine being on an operating system that I can't get consistent updates, especially when it's in the Linux community where that's a little bit more expected behavior from your operating system. So yeah, I guess on this note, I was using Fedora. Well, actually, no, this is a workflow I think I attempted on OpenSUSE. I don't remember. It's been so long now, but it started on, no, it was Arch-based. I'm sorry. I started, we tried Fedora because what I was trying to do was run Windows in GPU pass-through with KVM to video edit within
Okay.
Windows on Linux, which
Yeah.
is not an easy workflow to set
No,
up.
that sounds insane.
It was crazy. And I still want to give a major shout out to people in our old Discord community that helped me set it up because it took us like weeks to get it all set up. Pretty much, yeah, it was crazy. So when I was doing that, I eventually gave up because DaVinci Resolve has awful support for Linux because the only two officially supported operating systems are CentOS and Red Hat Linux. 7.3 specifically, I might add. I don't want to do that.
No, you
So
don't.
what kind of is that an area where Alma Linux could be like a good solution for somebody who wants official support? Because you can get DaVinci Resolve into R for Arch. You can get it on Ubuntu. They have random versions online, but I'm sure you know, especially in the enterprise world, that's not what people in enterprise want. They don't want some community project. They want to use the official software because they need official support for the software. And
right.
companies want to, you're paying for software that you're getting support for.
Right, right.
This is a really loaded way of just asking, where does Alma Linux fit in this picture as somebody who might want to use DaVinci Resolve without going through some insane GPU pass-through workflow?
I don't think I've looked at DaVinci Resolve specifically, though it has come up a couple times, so I think I need to. The more general answer that I will give you, if they are not supporting a version that is 8 or 9, then you're going to have problems. If they're still suggesting 7.3, then Alma Linux can't help you. I wish we could, but we cannot. If they are supporting Enterprise Linux 8 or 9 in any version, then you can use Alma Linux and it should just work. Most software that says that it will work for Red Hat or CentOS will work for Alma Linux. The only real exceptions are if they are looking for something that specifically indicates the operating system. If it says, you know, like they're looking on the in the Enterprise Linux world, it's /etc/os/release. If they're looking in that file for a specific operating system and they find Alma Linux instead of the one that they're looking for, then you might have problems. But from a compatibility, like a baseline compatibility perspective, it should just work.
That's so what you're saying is there's no technological difference in your operating system.
Right.
The only thing is a developer for a piece of software might be more strict and just not allow their software to run on something that's not the official OS
exactly.
from them.
Exactly.
Okay. Cool. Okay, so it doesn't solve my issues with DaVinci Resolve, but I'm sure that's still helpful information for anything else that actually tries to have any real Linux support.
Yes.
So I know Red Hat has gotten a lot of flack for its general structure as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
What is the Alma Linux organization? I know you're a foundation from your website. So
yeah.
How is that? What does that look like? And why did you choose a foundation?
Yeah, so we're trying to solve the problems that we had with CentOS, right? The reason that that there even could be an agreement between CentOS and Red Hat was that there was no central form of ownership, like I was talking about. So what we decided was the best course of action was to follow the format that a bunch of open source projects have taken, which is to set up a nonprofit foundation in the U.S., that owns everything. It owns the trademarks, it owns the software, it owns the infrastructure, everything that we're doing, even all the domains that we use, everything that happens within Alma Linux is owned by the foundation. And then the foundation is staffed and controlled by volunteers. So we have a membership structure where individual members, if they care about the future of Alma Linux, can join for free. It is not, we're not trying to gatekeep you having a voice in the future of the operating system or the future of the future of Alma Linux in any way. Because from my perspective, even if you're not contributing to the operating system, you should still have the opportunity to have a say. So those members on a regular basis, I can't say any specific number of years because we've already had two elections, even though we've only been around for 3 years and people are supposed to have 3-year terms. It's just how it all worked out. But on a regular basis, we hold an election for board representatives. Anybody can be nominated. Anybody can be elected. The sponsors and the individual membership all vote to decide who they want to have in those seats. And that's from my perspective, that's one of the biggest differences between what CentOS was, the old system, and what we are trying to set up. From my, like, democracy has its problems, right? I will not say that that's not true. But from my perspective, giving the power to the people who care about it the most is the most important thing we can do. And recently this year, because of all of the changes that we've had in how we're building, we also set up an engineering steering committee. And we're balancing the election side of the foundation's board with the engineering steering committee that is self-appointed, self-managed. Like the people on that committee are the ones who control who's on it. We, as the board, appointed the first set of people on it. And at some point, if God forbid something crazy happens with the steering committee and we, the board thinks that it has gotten irredeemably problematic, then we can like push a nuclear button and get rid of the entire steering committee. But that's the only power that the board has over the steering committee. They have complete control over how the project gets run from an engineering perspective. And that means that we have a group of people that work together that are elected, and a group of people that work together that are appointed. And together, they make all of the decisions around the foundation and the project. And I think that is helping make sure that we're all staying in line with what the community actually needs. It's really, really fun from my perspective. We're trying to set it up so that it will last as long as it needs to. And from my, like, the thing that I say to people is Alma Linux will exist as long as its community needs it. That's the way it should be.
Yeah. Isn't that like Batman? Isn't like
It's like
he
Batman.
exists as long as Gotham needs him.
Needs him, yep.
I don't I'm not that familiar with Batman. It just sounds like something I've heard from a Batman movie.
It does, I think it does sound like Batman.
Where are you in this whole Alma Linux world? Where do
Yeah,
you
so
reside?
I am currently the chair of the board. I started very early in the project. We like the foundation was formed in March of 2021, and I joined in early May, April. And then we, like, as part of the board, we were working toward like formalizing the structure and getting everything set up, getting our bylaws in place, getting our membership in place. And the initial like funding source and initial founder, Igor Seletsky, he's the CEO of Cloud Linux. He, as he was setting this up, said, "I know that the most important thing for this to survive is going to be neutral governance. And if I'm providing a bunch of money and I'm on the board, people are going to see this as just a Cloud Linux project, because that's not what it's going to look like, no matter how he's trying to, keep himself honest, or however you want to put it, right?" So he, from the beginning, said, "I don't want to be on the board long term. I'm here because I care about it and I know that it needs people right now." But he worked hard to recruit people that were active in the project or in the space to be part of the leadership so that we could start setting up the structure that I needed to have. And I was part of that recruitment. He came to me and said, "I need somebody who knows technical communities. I know so need somebody who knows how to talk to people. Do you want to come help build this thing that we're doing?" And I said, "Absolutely, I do." And in October of 2021, the board, Igor told us in September, but in October, we accepted Igor's resignation from the board, and the board elected me to replace him as chair. And then over 2-ish years, year and a half, we were working on the project, continuing to grow. I had started to get involved in the marketing committee to try and like bring more structure to what what was happening on the marketing side. Because every open source project needs marketing, right? Last year, I got laid off from Microsoft. And when that happened, was right around the time that Red Hat had announced the source code shift. And there was a big uptake in how much conversation there was around Alma Linux. And we really needed somebody full time. And the one of the sponsors, actually Cloud Linux, Igor, came to me and said, "Do you want to do this full time for a while? We could really use it. And I'm happy to sponsor you to do it full time." So now I am a contractor for for Cloud Linux, but I get to work on Alma Linux full time, and it's great. Like I get to be, I am both the chair and the person who pushes the marketing side of things, and it is the best of both worlds. I love
Yeah. No, that's super cool. And it sounds like you found a perfect little space
Right?
where all your
I get to
skills
be
kind of
my
come
own
together.
boss for an open source project. Like this is amazing.
Yeah, no, good for you. And it's something that I think a lot of people wish, because we talk a lot about how hard it is to run open source projects and make them. There's so much time and energy that goes into developing software. And it's a really hard ask to have people do that when they come home from a 9-to-5 job and they have to somehow find time to still develop things. And
Yeah,
so
agreed.
a thing that we commonly say back here is occasionally, if everybody just contributed even a few dollars to their favorite project,
Yes.
that would make the world of a difference,
Yeah.
because that's still better than the average of what we currently see right now in terms of people who are
Agreed, yeah.
contributing. A couple more questions about you that are kind of just for fun, and then I'll kind of zoom out a little bit for, I guess, the end of things here.
Sure.
I want to ask what your favorite, like, what's your daily driver operating system that you
Ooh,
use?
this one always gets me in trouble. So, when I was at, where was I working when I first started? I think, oh, when I was at a company called cPanel, I was doing support for them for a while, and then I moved into building their user community engagement. And when I was there, that was a whole, like everybody was using a Mac. And so I started using a Mac there, and I have just continued to use a Mac since then. And so my daily driver is Mac OS, and I don't think I'm going to change unless something drastic forces me to, just because I've been using it for more than 10 years now. Like it's the most comfortable operating system for me. I would have to have a motivation to change. So,
Yeah, that's fair. And it's a lot of people in the Linux community really like Mac OS, but especially Mac hardware. I know even Linus Torvalds himself, I think, does his development on a MacBook Air, if I'm not mistaken.
For a long time, he did. I think he just changed maybe last year, but yeah, for a long time, he did.
Oh, cool. I didn't know he changed, but yeah, it's not a bad place to be. And what's your favorite home desktop operating system for Linux? If you had to use Linux and you were going to use like a home desktop version, what would you pick?
So I'm gonna give two caveats. If I'm looking for a desktop that I don't need to run video games on, I don't need to do anything for, like if I'm, building a laptop for my mother-in-law, and I think all she's gonna do is, check her email and video call with her grandkids, it's gonna be Alma Linux, because it's all she needs is a browser to work, right? Like that's all we need, and that means that it'll be stable and it'll be fine, and I won't have to do a bunch of tech support. If it was for me or my nephews or something like that, then I'm gonna push them towards Fedora, because it's again what we talked about earlier. It's the one that is updated enough that you can do fun stuff, and the community around Fedora is fantastic and massive, and you can do any problem that you have. Either it's already been solved, or there are people that are incredibly smart and can help you solve it. So, yeah.
I could where we talk about Fedora a lot back here. It's my favorite desktop operating system on my end. And oh yeah, there you go. Proof that you're running that
Oh
you're on a Mac.
no,
For those listening to audio, I just got you did the heart emoji with your hands and then
It
did
showed up
the
on the
little
screen.
floating. What do you recommend? Is that suggestion also what you'd recommend to somebody listening to this podcast who maybe hasn't tried Linux? They're wanting to try it, and they might be on Windows or Mac OS. What would you kind of suggest that they try out?
The Linux operating system that you choose is not going to be, if you're just getting started, is not going to be nearly as impactful as the desktop environment that you choose, which is actually kind of a foreign concept for most people that are coming from Mac or Windows or Mac or, yeah, Mac or Windows. If you're just getting started with Linux, I need you to understand this thing called a desktop environment, which means that you can change everything about how you're interacting with your computer just by changing like one or two packages that are installed on your computer, one or two pieces of software that are installed on your computer. It is the most impactful thing about Linux from my perspective. It doesn't matter what you're running underneath, as long as the desktop environment is what you want. One of the most common desktop environments that get used is GNOME, and that one is typically fairly comfortable for most Mac and Windows users, Mac especially because it's got a dock and like that feels very natural to people. But the thing I will say is go find the desktop environment that you want and then find an operating system that supports your hardware and go with that.
Yeah, good advice. Good advice. Are you personally a so are you a GNOME or GNOME person, first off?
I think I go back and forth between them.
GIF or GIF?
Oh, GIF for sure. GIF for sure.
Yeah.
But when I was standing next to, there's this massive event called FOSDEM in Europe, in Brussels, every February, like the beginning of February. And we had a table and we ended up sitting right next to the GNOME Foundation. And the people at the table were pronouncing it like they were going back and forth. Some people called it GNOME, some people called it GNOME. So like if they don't do it consistently, I don't feel like it matters for anybody else.
Okay, yeah, that'll definitely get people riled up. Do you have a personal favorite desktop environment?
I mean, back when Linux was my daily driver, it was Fluxbox, but I don't think it even exists anymore.
I haven't heard of Fluxbox.
Yeah, it was extremely customizable and very lightweight. And it was when I was doing support, it was the one that I wanted because I could do everything I wanted to without having to point and click through too many menus. We'll put it that
Right.
way.
And then for like the more modern ones that are most like if you had to pick a Fedora spin, what would you choose?
I would have to look into them because I've been on Mac so long that I don't think I have a favorite. I
That's
think
fair.
I would default to GNOME because it's the only one I know right now. But
Yeah.
if I was using Linux as my daily driver, I am certain I would become a desktop environment hopper, shall we say. Kind of like a
Yeah.
distro hopper.
Very far.
Yeah.
Kind of the last thing I want to leave you with is what's kind of the long-term vision for Alma Linux and how can people get involved? How do you want to see people involved?
Yeah, for me, the kind of cop-out answer for what's the long-term vision, I want it to continue to feed and sustain its community and itself. One of the big things with open source projects is always funding, it's always support, it's always the things that users struggle with. So if you're involved in an open source community, you know that people come in and ask the same 10 questions every time they're getting started with it, right? And for me, the thing that I want to see with Alma Linux is that every time somebody comes in to our space for whatever reason, they're greeted with kindness, empathy, and answers. I want Alma Linux to be an operating system and a community that is built in a way that it doesn't matter if you're brand new or if you've been doing this for 20 years, you feel welcome and you get answers to the questions that you're asking. That's for me the big thing.
That's really great. And so if somebody's listening right now and they want to get involved, where would you kind of send them?
So there's a big old wiki page that talks about all of the different ways that you can contribute, whether you want to do something like highly technical, whether you're helping us with our testing or our build pipeline, or if you're wanting to get involved in marketing and you want to come help me staff events and make funny stickers and that kind of stuff. We literally just like every open source project has something for no matter what skill you are trying to build or trying to use, we would love to have you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it was really great to have you on for this interview. I hope that people learned something here today. If anything, they just got to know you a little bit better. And I really appreciate your time. I know that you're pretty busy with everything that you got going on. So.
Yeah, it's always nice to talk to new people, so I appreciate you having me.
And there you have it, folks. I hope that this was insightful and you learned something about the open source world, about Alma Linux, about Benny, some things about myself and DaVinci Resolve and some issues that I was struggling with there. I'm kind of using Benny as troubleshooting, but nonetheless, I hope it was insightful and I hope you all took something away from it. And if you did, I'm going to ask you to like this video, share it with anyone you know. Definitely try to share it around Linux and open source communities to try to spread the word about Alma Linux and get to know their team a little bit better. And of course, you can visit all the links down in the description. And we cannot do this kind of content without our Techlorians. So if you want to support Techlore, you can check out the ways to do that down in the description. Thank you all for listening and embracing open source and privacy by being a part of this. And I will see you next time on Techlore.